You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Wheelhouse. You may not have heard of today's guest, but the chances are you will have benefited from at least one of his creations. Jeff Siegel pioneered the digitization of medical imagery, taking your MRI and other scans off old-fashioned photographic film and onto hospital computer screens. He eventually sold his company and began cruising full-time. But the entrepreneur in him wasn't quite satisfied with this semi-retirement, so Jeff created what is now Active Captain, a fully interactive review site, guidebook, and social network for boaters. He has hundreds of thousands of members who constantly update the site with new information useful to the cruising community worldwide. It's a labour of love for Jeff, who, along with his wife Karen and their two dogs, has clocked up tens of thousands of miles, cruising the eastern seaboard of the US, the intracoastal waterway, and the Bahamas. I began by asking him what first got him into boating.
My father was an absolute lover of anything sailing on the water. And so I definitely got that from him. He taught me sailing. I used to go out with him on the Chesapeake Bay and, just sort of had a love for the water. Then Karen and I were married and I made a mistake there. We went out sailing with my parents, which is not something you do with your girlfriend ever. That's the wrong thing to do. But we got married and eventually moved to Maine, all the way up in the northeast of the United States, which is just a phenomenal water access place. And we started boating there.
Jeff, can I interrupt you there?
Yeah.
Go. When you said never go sailing with your parents and your girlfriend, I made a terrible mistake there. I've got to ask you, what went wrong?
What went wrong is that my wife, Karen, got the impression that sailing was sort of the way your parents do it. And that's not necessarily the way we've done any boating. So, their style was different. And so their end result is that Karen just was refused to buy a sailboat. Our choice was getting some kind of powered motorized boat. My parents didn't like any kind of excitement in sailing. So the experience of going out in the Chesapeake Bay in August and going in the middle of the bay and baking in 90 degrees, that was what she took away with what was sailing. And I had to kind of reposition what boating was. And so we ended up getting a trawler, exploring the main coast, up and down the coast, and just wanted to continue going further and further. That's where we are now, is that we're about to start our 14th year on this boat, and we've just gone all over. We've done the U.S. and the Bahamas and what's called the Great Loop and the Gulf of Mexico and the Keys and all of it. And it's been wonderful, and it's a very easy lifestyle for living aboard, something that I didn't really appreciate before because you just have more space and this boat points to wind really well, and it means you just go and you can get where you want to when you want, and there's advantages to that.
But you miss the sailing, do you?
I do, and we've agreed that when our cruising time is over, that we'll probably be living somewhere and we'll have a day and weekend sailboat. I wanted a really old 1970s Bermuda, Hinckley Bermuda 40, like all my life, and they're so common in Maine. And so I would love to have that kind of boat and, just use it on weekends and day sails and, like the Long Island Sound or the Chesapeake Bay. So, yeah, we will get there, but it's going to take a long road to get there.
Well, listen, your boat is Acapella, but let's get on to her a little later on. Tell us a bit about your life. Are you a software developer by trade?
Yeah, I'm more an entrepreneur, I think. That's from the time I was very young. I've always not done well working for other companies. I mean, the companies loved me, but I hated it. And my background is all technical. I started software developing, writing software when I was 14 years old, and that was in the 70s. And, growing up in the 70s and then, kind of becoming a professional with a degree and everything. And in the 80s, it was a perfect time. It was the heyday of software and entrepreneurship coming together, with all these great things happening. And so I got really interested in computer graphics. And it was very new back then. Things were either kind of DOS-based where, there's characters or very poor computer graphics, or there was line, you know, you needed special hardware and there was line drawing. And what I really liked was what was coming was, you know, these full images that you could display on a computer. And what I really liked there was the uses of images for medical use. I just thought that was, you know, it was sort of like really high tech. It could really make a difference. And I knew that I was in the right place of being involved in technology of it to kind of promote and push that.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Wheelhouse. My guest today is Jeff Siegel, creator and owner of Active Captain, the interactive review, guide, information and advice site for the cruising community worldwide. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll find out how his first company, Evergreen Technologies, came into being.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea, from boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
This is The Wheelhouse on Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Jeff Siegel. Jeff, Evergreen Technologies is how you made your name and made your fortune. What was the first step?
I graduated from college in 1980 and then went to night school at Johns Hopkins and was working for a company called Tektronix, who was the leader in computer graphics. And, you know, this is, I'm right out of college, and this is where I learned I can't be an employee. And so, you know, I did various learning about business and creating my own companies. And Evergreen was formed in 1988. It was my only job. It was all I did. The idea was we're going to build this new kind of software platform for medical imaging, for CT and MRI, nuclear medicine, even digital X-ray. Thankfully.
And just to interrupt you again,
sure.
I'm so sorry, I keep interrupting, but I think.
No, do it. That's fine.
People should know, in actual fact, if they've ever been to the hospital for an MRI or for a CAT scan or been in some sort of serious situation medically in which they've required one of these very high-tech scans where everything appears on the screen, you're the guy. You're the guy who pioneered this, right? Because previously, what, it would have been printed out?
It was the time where everything was on film through one medium or another, but it was captured on film, and I was the guy that was helping to take it. And to be fair, I mean, there were big companies involved in this too. GE Medical Systems, who became our biggest customer, was a major player in this. Bayer is a major player in this. You know, I was the little guy doing the new things that no one was doing. So the idea was that film was the old technology for these medical images, that the new technology was solely on the computer. And that was an incredible lesson that I never could have understood for exactly what happened later on with Active Captain, which we'll get to. But that was a very important point, that we were moving a kind of paper modality of film onto what are the things that you can do when it's all digital. And what are the things that happen to customers? What do they expect? Maybe hospitals. And what is this competition? There was a huge companies that didn't want the film to go away because their business depended on it. And yet, you know, there was no question that paper film was going to lose because there were just too many disadvantages to it. And those were incredible lessons that we learned. At the same time, Karen and I were married. We'd been married for 8 years at the time. And Karen was working marketing in Apple. And Apple was doing the most innovative stuff and, you know, really the next generation of how you sell products to customers. You know, Karen was supporting us. She her job, she was the only income. You know, it took 3 years, 2.5 years to write the software to where we could actually sell a product. And so Karen's job supported us, and she'd come home at night and was doing marketing for us, you know. So it was a wonderful synergy of technology and marketing coming together at just the perfect moment. And so we came out, we're ahead of it. So GE was a big customer of ours. A lot of companies that either don't exist or you never heard of, like Elsint and Toshiba. Well, Toshiba made MRIs back in those days. ADAC and all of these companies that made, you know, the scanners that a patient would lay in. But we'd connect to the display, and then you'd sit there on a Macintosh in those days, and eventually on a PC, and you'd see all of the images come in, and you can manipulate the images, and you combine them, and view them in 3D, and all of these, you know, really neat stuff that the digital modalities allowed.
So how long did you run Evergreen?
We ran that for 8 years. We built it. And what was beautiful is that, we were in our 20s and the beginning in our 30s, and we were working, if not competing, against multi-billion-dollar companies, which is $1 billion was a big deal in 1980. And so a couple of the companies, they actually took us under their wing, and there was one marketing director who would meet with me at one trade show one day a year for about 4 years. He would give us like these directions and this local knowledge, call it, for the industry that would be so phenomenal. And the last meeting I had with him was, he basically said, you know, you've probably taken it as far as you can go, that, you know, a product is like a child. You know, you nurture it, you help it grow, but occasionally, you know, the product is bigger than what you can give it anymore, and you have to, you know, let it go. And what started happening is about every couple months we were getting acquisition offers, and people wanted our technology is what, you know, they wanted. And he was right. And we sort of realized, you know, we didn't want to have a company of 100 people. I mean, we just didn't want that. We wanted to live on the main coast and go boating. So the right offer came, and we were acquired. You know, now you can't even get a CAT scan on film anymore. It's all digital, and now it's moved by the internet.
So, Jeff, I don't want to pry into your financial affairs, but essentially you sold Evergreen, a successful company, and that's how you and Karen can now afford to live aboard a boat and cruise around full time. Is that correct?
Yeah. In selling Evergreen, that's what allowed us to buy the trawler and take off. And we, be honest with you, we never had to work again. So, you know, we were off to explore, and we had a 10-year plan. We're going to buy, and we're going to, you know, sail the Caribbean and just, you know, cruise along and figure out. I mean, we were in our early 40s, and we're just going to kind of enjoy things for a little bit. And that was what Evergreen allowed us to do.
I wonder, can we just do a quick flashback? How did you and Karen meet?
I lived downtown D.C., and we worked at we worked together. And she was in definitely the sales and marketing side, and I was in the technical side. And it was just a really good combination. I'm the entrepreneur. She's definitely not an entrepreneur. I'm the one that has a bunch of ideas, and she's the one that takes them and kind of puts a business plan together, makes sure that they make a lot of sense. And I went to MBA school too, and she has an MBA degree. I got thrown out of MBA school. My counselor said, you shouldn't be doing this. You should go and do what you're doing. And so we've created this great team where she's basically the adult of the relationship, you know, or I come up with all of these ideas. And there's been a couple that have gotten through her, and those are the ones that have done very well. And so it's every entrepreneur needs a Karen. They need someone who can realistically and honestly be able to say, you know what, that's a really neat idea and it's really cool, but it's a really dumb idea to sell, and it's going to be a really hard thing to market because of all of these reasons. And I'll be the first to say that more things get, way more things have gotten blocked. Even features in ActiveCaptain get blocked because Karen says, you know, I really thought about this for a week, and we just can't do it.
So you mentioned earlier on, Jeff, that you took Karen sailing with your mom and dad, and that it was a bad idea because it kind of put Karen off sailboats. So was that her introduction to boats and the water? Was that her very first time?
Yes. She had never been on a boat before. She was afraid of the water and didn't swim. I mean, when we were married at the time, but you know, I wanted her to take swim lessons. We took swim lessons at night. And like, I was on the swim team in high school. I was doing triathlons, doing open water swims. The water has always been part of me. And she was definitely not coming from that environment. So this was all new to her.
It must have taken you quite a number of years to persuade her that the cruising lifestyle was for her.
Yeah, it was a couple steps at a time, you know, and I knew that. And I knew after seeing the reaction that we had, you know, from the sailing, you know, we got a wonderful old lobster boat in Maine. And we would just go out for the afternoons at first. And I would study the weather, and I would make it so that it was going to be just a beautiful, you know, Maine sunny day with, you know, dolphins along the sides. And we just, you know, carefully didn't do anything scary or dangerous, and brought her along to where she was saying, gosh, can't we go further? Why don't we try going overnight and, you know, anchor and stay at an island? And so slowly that built up over time, to where she was the one that came to me 2 years ago and said, let's sell the house and live on the boat full time. I mean, all right, it took 20 years, 30 years to get there. But, you know, that was her idea.
So you obviously turned it around on her, really, and did a good sales job on her. I mean, you were saying that she's the marketing genius and you're the entrepreneur, but you actually did a sales job on her.
Yeah, I think I treated her really kindly and let her experience it on her terms. And as she felt comfortable, you know, I think it is an enjoyable way to spend time, if not sightsee and tour. And she got that. She got it really quick. And if you do it in a lot of the ways that, you know, cruising happens, it's actually a social event. I mean, we're here at this marina right now, and we have things every single night where, you know, it's all the other night. Tonight's pizza night. And so a whole group of us got together, and there's this restaurant making pizzas for everyone, and we're going to get together and have kind of a joint dinner. It's not this, you know, we're behind an island somewhere and we're not going to see anyone for months. We were just anchored in Georgetown with 400 boats. You know, we ran into people every single day. You know, those things are really important. That's why we're in year 13 of our 10-year plan. You know, it's just has been, it's become more than we thought.
There are many, many types of non-sailing boat. So why did you plump for a cappella? Why a trawler?
Because a trawler, I like the sailing lifestyle, and I like the speed of 5 to 7 knots. I didn't want something that would go 20 knots, you know, blasting through the water. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't what I thought of boating. I think of a trawler as a sailboat with two engines, or one engine. And it's very much, and we hang out with sailboats. You know, that is the lifestyle of the trawler today. And those both the people in the community that we were a part of, and that's where I knew where I wanted to be, and that worked out really well. You know, trawlers are sort of the motorized version of a sailboat for the most part. Our sweet spot is about 7.5 knots. We never go faster than that. We anchor a lot. You know, we were just anchored for 10 weeks. This is finally, you know, this is so nice. I don't have an anchor alarm at night now, the second night in a row. And it's a sailboat lifestyle with a little bit more space, a little bit more reliable, as long as everything's working.
So tell us a little bit about a cappella then. Take us on a quick tour.
Sure. She is the Fever 53 pilot house. So there's a very traditional layout. She has a salon in the stern leading up to a galley. Then you go up a couple stairs where there's a pilot house. That's where I am. That's my office, where it's fully enclosed. Then there's inside stairs up into a flybridge where there's another helm and a bimini over top, you know, for nice days. We cruise with two dogs, two large dogs, Labrador Retrievers. That's Dylan and Dee Dee. And they are the fourth dogs we've had on the boat. So since the day one, we've had dogs on this boat. And what we really liked about the boat, what was the reason we bought it, was this is one of the few trawlers in the early 2000s that we found that had inside stairs to the flybridge. Often trawlers had like a ladder that you climb up to get to the flybridge. You know, our dogs are with us all the time. So if we go up to the flybridge, they're not going to be happy, you know, laying down in a salon somewhere. They're going to want to go up to the flybridge too. So this boat had inside stairs. They could just walk up and they'd go with us. And it's very comfortable. It's very roomy. We have two staterooms, so there's a lot of space. You know, we have a queen size bed, and both dogs sleep in bed with us. In all honesty, that's tough at anchor on a hot night, but they won't sleep anywhere else. It has a washer and dryer. We have 350 gallons of water. We carry 1,000 gallons of fuel. She burns about 4.5 to 5.5 gallons per hour. You know, depending on conditions. So it's very economical. You know, looking at a fuel, you'd think would be one of the highest expenses. It's not. Fuel is actually pretty reasonable. And it's just very convenient. I mean, we have a great big battery bank. everything's pretty efficient. We run a lot on DC. We ran our generator once for a couple hours every day for the 10 weeks we were anchored. And that's enough to charge everything up. In all honesty, when we're both using our laptops, that's the biggest draw on our battery bank. Laptops, those together take about 10 amps of 12 volt. And that's more than our refrigeration. Our refrigeration's about 6 or 8 amps, and everything else is maybe 1 or 2 amps. So we've gotten the boat pretty efficient. It could use, if we had good solar, we could probably skip most days on the generator, and we think about that. I just don't have time to do it. So it's a wonderfully efficient boat. It's a very safe boat. We draw 6 feet, which is pretty deep for a trawler. It's stabilized. It has fin actuators that move, and so it is rock solid in ocean. We've been in way too heavy seas, and the boat is just phenomenal. And when we first got the boat, we would go in 5 to 8 foot seas. After a few years, we realized we can just rather wait and get 3 foot seas. So we often do that. And right now we try to be as smart, and we try to go as flat dead calm as we can. And it's just more enjoyable. And also now we're working a lot actually when we're underway. So it makes it hard when things are rocking around. But she's a wonderfully safe boat, really comfortable, and has just been dream. It's rare that people keep a boat this long, and we're in about to start our 14th year with it.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Wheelhouse. My guest today is Jeff Siegel, creator and owner of Active Captain, which is like TripAdvisor for the boating community. Actually, it's better than that. Give it a try. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll find out Jeff's favorite cruising waters.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea. From boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
This is The Wheelhouse on Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Jeff Siegel of Active Captain. Jeff, tell us about America's intracoastal waterway.
Yeah, we've done that 24 times or so. That's the birth of Active Captain came because of the ICW, because of going up and down so many times. And we've been at every stop, to the point where we know every corner, we know what's around the corners. And we now jump offshore a lot. We make offshore jumps along the ICW. But we've been Maine to Key West many times. Often go over to the Bahamas, where we're in now. Although we weren't able to go to the Bahamas for a few years because of internet. We, you know, Active Captain has sort of changed things in a lot of ways. Then we did the Great Loop, which is it's sort of the circumnavigating the inside of the entire East Coast through the Hudson River to Erie Canal. You can get to the Great Lakes, go up and around Michigan, and come down the Mississippi River, the Illinois River, Ten Tom River, and you end up in the Gulf of Mexico. And then you come around the other side of Florida. So that's called the Great Loop, and we've done that. We put on about 45,000 miles in the 13 years. We thought we'd go further in the Caribbean. Active Captain has pretty much stopped that because of, you know, the need for continuous internet. But we think about that. The boat can certainly do it. The boat could go transatlantic. It's not really of interest to us to do that. We do overnights. We do occasionally a double overnight to get some mileage. But we really like going stop to stop and sitting down and, you know, getting to know people and, you know, being a local resident of the community. Like, you know, and that's what we're doing here. We pulled in 2 days ago here, and we're going to stay for 4 or 5 weeks. And so we'll become Bohemian residents for, you know, 5 weeks, and we'll go to the school, and we'll take part in all the markets. And that's what we've really have learned to love.
So, Jeff, what was it? You mentioned the ICW earlier on, that first sowed the seed in your mind for your next creation and the reason that you and I are talking today, which is Active Captain. How did it come about?
It came about for all the right reasons. All the right reasons why an entrepreneur should create something. It's because they're finding a need that they have themselves. You know, most products happen because, you know, an entrepreneur sees a need, but in this case, we were living it. We bought this boat in 2003, and around 2006, so that was many years. I mean, we had gone to the Bahamas. We had been up and down the East Coast a few times. I was very frustrated by the cruising data that I had. We'd pull into a marina, and, you know, everyone, within 10 minutes, everyone's talking to one another. And so, you know, we'd say, gosh, you know, that anchorage that we just left, that was the worst place to be. You know, the holding was awful. And so, you know, what would happen is they would, the person with us would say, well, everyone knows you don't go to that anchorage. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, we didn't know. And so there's all this local knowledge that it was like happenstance. If you happened to be in the right place in the right time and met the right person, you could get some local knowledge. So these conversations that every single set of boaters has at the dock, we wanted to figure out a way to capture that and record it so that the next boater would also have the benefit of it, even though they weren't there and part of it. There was a series of guidebooks in the U.S. by a guy named Skipper Bob. It was very low-tech. They're almost mimeographed kinds of black and white sheets that were just bound together, you know, with a spiral-bound thing. He sold them once a year. And what happened is the idea was that if you had the book, you email him with whatever changes you saw in that book. And then if you did more than 6 changes, you got next year's book for free, which is kind of cool. I like that idea. And otherwise, the books were like $15. He would give you a lot of local knowledge. But the problem was it was local knowledge from last year. So like things like prices were never good. You know, things that happened because of storms, like shoalings that would happen, or, you know, buoys got missing and inlets that got changed. You know, you'd kind of still need some local knowledge for that. And on my own, you know, I was still a software developer. I couldn't get away from it. So even while we're cruising, I wrote a chart plotter for the original Palm Pilots, if you remember them, licensed it to another company, and they sold tens of thousands of copies of it. And it was really a lot of fun. And because of that product, I was speaking at boating events. The talk was actually, this is why a smartphone is going to be a really great thing for a boat. You know, this is before iPhones and before all of that. You know, there was this idea of all these apps that you could someday run on the phone that's in your pocket. And I had created one of the first ones. I learned a lot from doing it. So in doing these talks at boating events, I met Skipper Bob. And so what I did was, in 2006, I was really frustrated with both the marketing of the guidebooks and the content of guidebooks, that they were so often wrong. And a light bulb also went off, that what I saw was the digitization of cruising data was the same exact thing as the digitization of MRIs and CTs replacing film. You know, in this case, the digital cruising information was going to replace the paper guidebook. And there was no stopping it. That was going to happen. Except this time, I knew how companies would react. I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew what we had to say immediately to users of it. And I knew how to position the whole thing. And you know, Karen, too. I mean, obviously from the marketing side of it. And so I actually made the business proposal to Karen to do Active Captain. And she didn't want to do it. She said no. And not because it was a bad idea, but because it was like we were done with that. The promise was no more employees, no more companies. You know, we wanted to just kind of enjoy life. Then we were in there's this one day, and it all came down to this one event where we were on the Chesapeake Bay, and it was one of these perfect storms that came together where three different systems came together, and it made this horrendous storm that no one really saw on radar and weather forecasting. And it was a very bad thunderstorm that was coming up. And we decided we were going to anchor out for the night. We decided we should go into a marina, and it's just too dangerous. So we have all the latest guidebooks. We left Maine that fall, and we're calling all these marinas, and they're all filled because everyone was smarter than us and had already gone into all the marinas. And there was this one marina in Norfolk, Virginia, where the phone number was wrong. You know, we call and the phone number wasn't there. So we were just really tenacious, and we kept calling businesses around the area. And we got a florist, you know, on the same block. And they said, oh, yeah, we know the marina, and here's the phone number. And it was a new number. And so we called the number, and we got, like, the last slip at the marina. And we pull in, and there's this torrential rain. Lightning actually hit the marina, and other boats were damaged. We were fine. It was such a bad storm, you know, multiple days of thunder and lightning. We were stuck there for 3 days. And so I actually made slides. I gave a sit-down presentation to Karen. And the idea of it was, if they can't get the phone numbers right, how are they getting anything else right? And the thing was, the marketing of them was all wrong. They were biased because you'd buy the guidebook, but they were actually pushing the companies who bought advertising in the guidebook. And that was just so wrong for, you know, me as a boater. I mean, you know, I can see the business plan for it, but as the boater, that was all wrong. And Karen sat there, and we talked about it, you know, for 3 days. And we left that marina, and Karen said, you know what, you're right. We'll do one more spin. We'll do one more company. But there's only one promise. And the promise is that no employees. Because that's the hardest thing with the company. Evergreen, we were spending, you know, I've always loved the technology side of it. But I was spending 80% of my time dealing with employees and interrelationships and project management. And I was doing 20% of the technology, and we just didn't want to do that. So if we couldn't run the company with her and I and a couple dogs, then it was time immediately to let it go.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Wheelhouse. My guest today is Jeff Siegel, creator and owner of Active Captain, which is like TripAdvisor for the boating community worldwide. Actually, it's better than that, and I urge you to give it a try. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, Active Captain is born.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea. From boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea. All that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
This is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of Block Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, Director of Membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
This is The Wheelhouse on Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Jeff Siegel of Active Captain. Jeff, after that pitch, when your wife, Karen, finally agreed to embark on another business venture, how long did it take to bring Active Captain to life?
I made the entire website. I wrote it while we were underway. So this was about September, maybe late August. I finished the website in December. It was early December. And then we actually, the boat was in Florida. We actually drove back up to Maine for the holidays. You know, we have all our friends up in Maine still. So we drove up to Maine. We had no intention of having the company ourselves. Active Captain, the name didn't exist. This was going to be, the idea was Skipper Bob on the internet. That was the framework that was in my head, was this is what would happen if Skipper Bob met the internet. This is the website that would be reproduced from it, where the idea was that boaters could instantly add new data to it, and then it would automatically be available to everyone else. I hadn't pitched it at all to Bob. I hadn't even called him. We went back to Maine, and I finished the website. And this was about the week before Christmas. And I realized that, you know, Bob, he lived in Pennsylvania, and we could drive, you know, just like 100 miles out of the way. We could drive and meet Bob, and I wanted to show him the website. And that would be my pitch, that, you know, and this, the website was finished. I mean, it was 100% done. And so I called him up at home, and his wife answered the phone, only to tell me that he had passed away that week, if you can believe that. So we actually just, we put everything on hold. And then after the first of the year, we kind of realized, okay, well, how would we market this? You know, what, and then, you know, Karen put together some plans, and, you know, our idea was that we're not going to have advertising, no, not even banner ads. That wouldn't be the way to do it. That the advertising should come because boaters love a marina so much that the marina wants to make sure Active Captain stays around. It is a really unique idea, and it's a weird concept. It makes a lot of sense today, and it's exactly what's happened. A marina can't come to us and say, we want to pay you for exposure. We turn them down. We turn down marinas every day of the week who want to do that today. What we want to do is we want to have marinas that are going to pay us because they have high ratings, and they want the world to know they have high ratings. We won't adjust their ratings. We won't delete if they get a bad review. We're not going to delete that review. We're not going to adjust it. We want to help them in the marketing of how to meet the internet and how to approach bad reviews and how to look at the reviews and learn from them. And that was the whole, that was sort of the marketing business plan, no advertising. And we had the luxury of, we fully could fund it ourselves, you know, without any problem we're going to give it 10 years. It didn't need to generate any money at all. So we could really do what we wanted and really do what we thought was right for boaters. We used to say that we treated boaters as our customer, even though they were never going to buy anything from us. You know, Active Captain had to be free for them, because the way they paid us was by contributing the data. You know, okay, here's a new hazard. This marina has a new fuel price, or this anchorage is really bad in southeasterly winds. We couldn't create that data ourselves. And, you know, for the first 4 years, 5 years, every single time we went to a trade show or a boater event, the absolute number one question was, well, when are you going to, you know, oh, this is really great, but you're going to charge us for it eventually. And we actually had to come out multiple times and say, we are committing. We'll never, ever charge for, you know, having access to the Active Captain data. It took years because it had to build up that base of marina ratings and anchorage ratings and even hazard comments. So it had to get to the point where marinas came to us saying, you know, we ask people why they're coming to our marina, and, you know, today 30% of people are coming because they saw us on Active Captain. Well, that started then turning into 50% of the boaters. There are marinas today that are 90% of the boaters are coming in because of the reviews. It's no different than, you know, we go out of town, we use TripAdvisor for restaurants. If a restaurant has 3-star ratings, we're just not really all that interested in going.
Where next for Active Captain?
The next is, we've taken it as far as we think we can go in terms of sort of the destination information. Although there is one other piece that we've done really well as a start, and we think it really needs to go further. So in terms of marinas and anchorages and hazards and all of the other things we call local knowledge, like bridges, we realize that charts show how high bridges are often at, you know, even at high water. But when it's a restricted bridge, charts never showed, you know, that they open on the hour or they're closed, you know, they won't open between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. Kind of information is really critical. You know, if you want to know, should we make that, you know, there's a bridge 18 miles ahead. Should we, you know, we're going to hurry up and get there only to find out that it's closed for 5 o'clock rush hour. So, you know, we have all of that information and ferries and where they go and inlets, what are the depths and issues with inlets. So all right, the piece that we still can do more on is that we started attracting the attention of governments. First, it was NOAA. NOAA started noticing that the hazard data that we were having was weeks ahead of what they were getting from the Coast Guard.
Just to interrupt you there for a moment, Jeff, for those who live outside the U.S., NOAA is
the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They're the chart producers for the U.S. They own and produce all of the charts for U.S. waters.
Okay, sure. So you've attracted the attention of this venerable institution, and how are you going to team up?
They were moving themselves from paper to digital in a big way. In fact, NOAA doesn't even produce their own paper charts anymore. They only produce digital data. And so they started producing chart updates literally every day. They now produce, they update 100 charts a week. And what they were finding was, well, what they really wanted a source of, you know, shoaling of channels, and so that they could update the charts immediately and not only feedback our data, but feedback the chart data. And they were finding our data that the crowdsourcing technique was so effective. It was better than what they were getting from other government agencies who should have been doing that, you know, on their own. And crowdsourcing isn't perfect. You know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, complain, well, I saw this hazard and, you know, there was a wrong information. Well, and that's the nature of crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing is about getting multiple inputs on a point, because the crowd is always by consensus right. Individuals may have wrong information, individuals may get confused, but the idea of getting a bunch of different people with different experience levels and different boats and different times of day and even different times of the year, getting them in together when consensus happens among their input, that data is the best data you can provide. Well, no one noticed it. They said, well, we can take advantage of that because we'll send that to cartographers so they can see, you know, what did people report yesterday that we should either send a team to or we should report in the charts right now. You make a report of a missing buoy today, a buoy off station. The next morning, the cartographer who is in charge of that chart in NOAA has an alert on his desk saying there's a report of that buoy moved. And maybe by the afternoon, they're changing that chart. So that's been in place now for almost 3 years. They're spectacularly happy with it. It's going really gangbusters. It's saving everyone money, because instead of patrols needing to find out what's changed, they now have all of us recreational boaters feeding back this data. Little do we know that we're actually feeding it back to the people who can correct the buoy. You know, they'll send out the survey team who will go and move the buoy back.
Jeff, I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't think me rude when I say this, but it sounds to me like you are having the least relaxing retirement of anyone I've ever spoken to. I wonder, how much longer do you think you'll keep cruising?
You know, I don't know. Here's where we are. We sold our house last year, because we were spending more and more time, and the boat started feeling so much like home. And literally, like I said, Karen came to me and said, why are we running up to Maine to spend 2 months? And we loved our house. Our house was a historic home that we renovated. We put a lot of love into it. But why are we running up there to spend 2 months just to get back on the boat to then go to the Bahamas? And she said, it's time to sell the house. And so that enters a whole new realm where this is our only home. We have no other house. We sold everything. We had two cars. We sold every piece of furniture. Five pieces that were family things we kept, and we have a little storage, you know, unit now where those pieces reside. So I don't know if 3 years from now we'll be done, or if 10 years from now we'll be done.
You mentioned earlier on the Hinckley Bermuda 40, a classic sailboat from, I don't know, maybe designed like 50 years ago, 45 years ago, so something like that. If money were no object, and Karen had no objections, what boat would you buy? Would you be in a Wally Gator or a Herreshoff? Or?
That's such a good question. That is such a good question. You know, if for me today, I've learned to love a pilot house. But there's something about cutting the engines and being on the ocean and having an overnight, you know, with just you and the stars. I think if we had a large enough, really good inside pilot house, motor sailor even, I think Karen would do that. I mean, that said, you know, our lifestyle today is that, you know, we still have a little bit too much in the commitment. And the trawler lets us get to meet any commitment that we have. In our hometown in Maine, in Castine, there were a significant number of Sparkman Stevens boats. And in my heart, I love a wooden boat. You know, Maine is the place for wooden boats. Having owned one, I don't know that I really want one day to day. But I would love to have one of those classic, you know, sailing yachts. It's hard to see past the fact that active captain is a big part of our life, and having reliable means of moving from point to point is really important. But that sailing is never going to get away from me. And for me, that B40 is still, it's the prettiest boat that I've ever seen. We still pass them occasionally here. There's many more of them in Maine. Luckily for me, Hinckley is one of our partners. And so we actually work with the company. I'm really happy. You know, I can't say that there's any boat that I'm ready to give up for. But that said, you know, I'm on Yacht World looking around every day.
What's the very best thing about living on a boat?
You know, there's a sense of being able to take care of yourself that I really like. Self-reliance. But it's more than just that you feel good that, you know, I mean, you know, there's at any one time there's 20 different issues going on, but any of the really big ones I can fix and I can make that happen. And I have to be a plumber, an electrician, but it's more than just the self-reliance. It's the self-reliance then allows us to be at anchor for 10 weeks and experience things and go to beaches that there is no way that any commercial means of transportation can take you there. And then the icing on the cake is the social piece that can sit on top of that, where you get to meet people that are in general not, they're at the right point in their life where they're not worried about, you know, raising families and, you know, going to work, and everyone is more relaxed and it's just a fun way. So, you know, it's kind of all of those pieces intertwined together create the entire environment. And it's such a wonderful lifestyle. It's not for everyone, but it's a wonderful way. And if you can live it, it's beautiful.
Jeff Siegel, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been an absolute pleasure and fascinating to hear your story.
Anytime. Love to do it. Love to get more people. You know, one of our most favorite things to do is to help people realize, you know, how to get into this, how to do, and I mean boating and cruising, you know, how to take your time, how to do it slow, how to work with a spouse who's a little bit unsure. You know, Karen is a great, great ambassador to cruising because here's someone who is afraid and now she's pushing me.
Jeff Siegel. And I have to say, Jeff is a really nice guy. It was a pleasure to talk to him and we could have chatted all day. I recorded this interview a few weeks ago, since when he has bought a new boat. He is now the proud owner of Redhead, a 65-foot pocket freighter built by Florida Bay Coasters, which used to belong to no less than Billy Joel. This has been The Wheelhouse on Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. Thank you for listening. In the next edition of the programme, I will be talking to Howard Rice, as he prepares for what can really only be described as an epic and perilous solo voyage through arguably the most hostile sailing environment in the world. If you take a closer look at your world map, you will find that at the tip of South America, across the Strait of Magellan, rather than a single block of land, there is a vast archipelago. This is Tierra del Fuego, the Land of Fire, a territory consisting of many islands, the southernmost of which, Isla Hornos, is the location of Cape Horn. It is a cold, wet, windy and inhospitable place with infamously tempestuous and squally seas. And Howard Rice will be sailing those seas not in a cosy, modern scientific research vessel, but in Southern Cross, a tiny wooden sailboat just 11 feet and 11 inches long, which he has built himself. Joining Howard and I will be filmmaker David Nichols, whose company Lutra Productions will be documenting Howard's entire voyage. Don't miss it.